Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
This is episode 49, everyone, and we have a jam-packed... Pearl, you didn't say, come on, 49,
right.
like you normally do.
But we got a jam-packed show, like she was saying, girl.
That is true. We do have a jam-packed show. And Pearl's especially excited because... we recorded one of the interviews last week, and I did a pre-recorded interview that you'll be hearing in a little bit, so she gets off a night early.
Right. Not like I don't got other stuff I still got to do, but the sooner I can get out of here, you know, the better.
Exactly. So on this episode, just a little recap of what's going to be coming up for you over the next 2 hours, we will have with us, she is an out rocker who is well known for her surf music, as well as... we dug into her history with the FBI, girl. We have Miss Susan Surftone, who's going to be joining us.
Come on, Susan Surftone.
As well as, we are going to be joined in a pre-recorded interview that I finished just this afternoon. It was so exciting for me to talk with the legendary 80s and 70s sex symbol and icon, Miss Lonnie Anderson, is going to be on.
All right.
As well as, we're going to be joined later in the hour, also... by, she is a 1990s pop music diva, and she's going to be having some new music coming out because she's working with a friend of the podcast, Mr. Leo Frappier, on her new single, Literally As We Are Speaking. We'll have Kim Sims with us, so it's going to be a cram-packed couple of hours for you guys. But I'm glad that Pearl's getting to jet out of here a little bit early. She's probably going to go home and work on something because she makes her big return to the stage, San Francisco.
Right, on Sunday. So, San Francisco, you better come out to Pollo's gig over at the Glamazon at the cafe this Sunday.
Yes. So, did you get all new costumes made for the twins?
I have some new costumes. Yes, I do. And like I told you guys, don't expect me to be out there in fucking pasties and stuff because that's never going to be
Liza Minnelli. As soon as she gets her new hips, she's going to be, like, naked all the time, I can just tell you.
It's almost tax season, so those hips better be rolling in soon.
So, you did Helen Heel's show in Sacramento this past weekend, yes?
Actually.
Oh, damn, she said actually.
I did John McCradle's wedding.
McCardle.
I can never say it right, girl.
Oh, my God.
McCardle. And,
Get it together, Pearl Tez.
Right. So me, Sayoni Gray, and Amoratis were driving down to Sacramento. Sayoni's back tire exploded in Fairfield. So we were stuck in Fairfield.
Did she not have, a spare?
No, she did not have a spare, girl.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, girl. So then the highway patrol comes over, and then, like...
were you guys all in drag already?
Yeah, I was. They were in face, so they were, like, painted, but had, like, boy clothes on. And I'm out here looking like a straight hoe in, like, a little dress, my titties all out and stuff. Girl, it was a mess.
That is, like, a fucking nightmare. That's a drag nightmare.
Fairfield at that, girl. So then
it is, like, a multiracial version of Tu Wong Fu, bitch.
It was.
You know what you career girls want? Careers? Same thing as every girl wants. Oh, no, please don't do this. Please, no.
Daddy, is your sugar?
Please, no. Look, when a lady says no, she means... get your hand off my dick!
I know what career girls like you want.
Career? Right. Career girls. So, Highway Patrol pulled over, and they get... girl, we had to roll on three tires and her rim off the freeway. I swear to God, it took like 25 minutes to get that car off the freeway. But it was awful with the Highway Patrol rolling behind us.
Okay, so...
It was, girl.
So you never made it to Helen's?
We never made it to Helen's show.
What happened to Helen's show? Were all of you guys in the show?
All three of us were in the show, but she was a...
OMG.
Right.
Helen, no wonder you canceled on Pearl's party.
Right. But she actually was able to get... she was able to get Malay over to her show because she was performing across the street for her birthday.
Okay.
I know Susan Bellucci was able to step in, and somebody else, but I can't remember who it was. But she did it, and girl, now because of it, she's got another show that they're offering her on a different Sunday night every month.
Oh, wow.
So you better work, Helen.
Oh, my God. Well, girl, I can only imagine the stress that Helen was feeling. I mean, honey, when your entire cast cancels, that is drag drama at the highest.
Well,
bitch.
Half of the cast, because there were six total.
Oh, okay, well, see, for me, that would have been literally my entire show would have canceled. And it's hard enough getting these hoes to get up in there anyway at the regular right time.
It's hard enough to get you up in there at the right time.
But when I walk in, I'm ready to go. Bitch, I am the show. So when I walk in, the show goes.
Girl, let's take note. If Poyo is not at this show Sunday on time, I'm starting the goddamn show without her. I'd be like, cue the music, DJ.
Whatever. Well, God, that's dramatic. Who knew? Sorry about it.
Oh, girl, you should have. It was awful. But, you know, it was awful. That's all I could say.
There would have been so much stress. I can just imagine you bitches, like,
girl,
the sweat pouring down your faces, all of the embarrassment and the stress and anxiety.
We all went to the gas station afterwards. It was just
damn.
We have to get picked up by her stepdad out there.
Girl, that's why you have to have a fucking spare in your car. Like, that's why you have to have a spare in your car.
Yeah, well, I mean...
End of that story. Like, get a spare in your car, kids.
I mean, I guess so. Whatever.
So, this week, this is where I'm talking to Pearl earlier in the week, you guys. And so I had I would say minor, but it wasn't terribly minor, outpatient surgery this past week. And it's like something that I've told her I wanted to talk about on air just because of the fact that a lot of people I don't think would, because it is very personal, but I think that it's very important. So I went in to get like a rectal exam.
You know, she's at that age.
Well, exactly right. In this case, Pearl is right. She's a sniz, but she is right.
Right.
Like, once you get to be of a certain age, especially if you're a gay man, you need to start getting rectal exams. It's just like if you are a woman.
I think they recommend it once you hit like 50.
40. Once you get 40. And just like for women over 40, you should start getting increased number of mammograms, because there's like an increased possibility of something going awry. As we age, things do start to change, and we need to be aware of our bodies. So about 6 months ago, I went in for a rectal exam, and they had discovered HPV, like, growth, which, by the way, that doesn't mean I'm a skeezy whore. It also does not mean it doesn't mean I'm not a skeezy whore.
Yeah.
But it means that all people, like, the vast majority of people have HPV. Some people have it in a naturally occurring basis. Some get anal warts, or some get warts or other things. But HPV occurs in people. You can also now get immunized for it at a young age, but a lot of people, there's a whole argument about immunization about it. Anyway, regardless, you should get checked because it happens for most people. You find that you get it. And
so you can get it like frozen or something.
Right. But in most cases, if you get it, they'll just freeze it off and then nothing comes of it. But if you have had it, now I knew like 5 years ago that they had discovered HPV, and it can be classified as low grade or high grade. And high grade means that it is...
Girl, it's like herpes. You either got like the minor herpes, or you got like the herpes number two, girl.
I don't know about what numbers of herpes, but Pearl looks like she knows all of the numbers for herpes. So I'll take your word for it, bitch.
Girl, HPV is not too far from there.
So, well, it's very similar because it's like it is recurrent and you get it in any capacity. So 5 years ago they discovered it. It was like a lower grade. Well, this year or last year when they
evolved in our ass,
it had my sniz was like a petri dish of HPV down there, and it had progressed to a point where it was considered high grade in four places. And what that meant is that they strongly encouraged me then to either go on an experimental treatment, which I did not do, just because of the fact that it seemed like a literal pain in the ass, possibly.
Would they have paid you?
Maybe like $200, but I just opted instead just to get it treated. And it's like 5 months it takes you to get on this wait list to get treated. But the treatment for it,
you haven't been treated.
I have been treated. Okay. So the four locations, what high grade means is that it has a potential to develop into a cancerous lesion or growth. So I went in and they go in, and when initially they freeze it. But girl, once they decide to remove it, they actually burn off all of the locations. Mm-hmm. And it was very weird because they put an anoscope, which is like a funnel sort of, up your butt. And then your doctor is up in there with one of those miner's caps with like a light on the front of it. And she's really getting up inside your sniz. And
I hope you cleaned out before you went.
You're not really allowed to. They don't want you to, because douching or any kind of anal cleansing, I still did, girl, but I still did because I was like, oh, this woman cannot be up in my hoo-hoo without all the, like.
Right.
Anyway, so should they go up in there and then it's on television in front of you?
No, I'm cleaning out.
You guys, it's not like she goes up into you 2 feet. She goes up into you, like, maybe 6 inches. Ah, look at that, you guys. I'm talking about it, and Pearl's trying to steal my prescription drugs. Girl, those are my painkillers.
Oxycodone.
Yes, girl, those are the painkillers.
I need a 325 milligram tablet. I am down for the party.
Those are good, y'all. But I, they go in, and it's on a television set next to you, and you actually get to watch the surgery.
You have it recorded?
I was going to Facebook Live it. But I did not. Instead,
girl,
you guys.
I don't think everyone wants to see inside of your anus, girl.
Well, but it's educational,
can you see the
walls,
girl. Though? I want to know if you can see her walls.
Oh, well, like, girl, look.
Ew.
This is my doctor talking to me.
Oh, my God.
Pearl's looking inside my snit. So that's an anal papilla. It's just like a little abnormal growth.
That whole thing is the HPV?
No, that's an anal papilla. And did you see that thing? That was a needle sticking into my sniz.
Did you feel that?
Yeah. So.
Wait, she said it's going to come back?
Well, she said if they don't fully get everything, it can come back. Watch.
It's like back. Oh, my God.
How about. She's like, did you feel heat? Yes, bitch, I felt heat.
Oh, she's burning it right now.
She's burning it. Watch. See how it turns like gray or brown?
How are you not screaming?
Well, because she had given me 12 shots in my anus. Wait, oh, look. I also, right here on my pucker, I have like a little, there was a that's my butthole, by the way. The external of my butthole. I snuck that one in, y'all. Bro, it's so dead. Watch this one. This one's so gross. Like, see how it's...
Oh, my God, girl.
Yeah. It sounds
like... I know you felt ready to go after that. They then just burnt everything inside of you out.
Girl, let me tell you, in about another week, once I stop pooping blood, my ass is going to have a new car smell. It's gonna smell like it's gonna smell like a new car, bitch. It's gonna be so.
I'm gonna go down to the races, girl.
Honey, I was like, after she got finished burning off all the inside of my sugar walls, bitch. I was like, why does it smell like the parking lot at Outback Steakhouse up in here?
Oh, Lord.
So, anyway, the reason I told her I really wanted to talk about this on air is because I think, in general, as humans. When we have things that are done, like, I mean, this was done in my ass, you guys. It's not cute. It's not, like, something that...
It's not glamorous,
It's
girl.
Not glamorous. But let me tell you something. Instances of rectal cancer among gay men are on the rise. And instances of, like, undetected things of this nature turning into cancer are 33% more likely among gay men than they are straight men. And so if, as a gay person who has been through this experience, who's, like, battled, like, the, oh, my God, like, this is kind of shameful, I don't care. There is no shame that I'm going to experience, allow myself to experience, that is going to cost me my health.
And you have to be careful with stuff like HPV, because even that, I think, is so transmittable.
It is. And the thing is that women get it, HPV also, and you can get it, in, of course, in your vagina.
Right.
And it can...
You can end up not being able to give birth.
Exactly right. It can cause you to become sterile.
Yeah.
So go get checked out for these things. The other reason I decided to tell about it is because, first of all, I was, like, sending those videos that I was showing Pearl just now to, like, about 10 people while it was happening. I was basically sending my...
Girl, you should have just Facebook Lived it.
Yeah, I mean, like, and the other reason is because I think that... Like, I remember one time asking my mom if she gets a mammogram, and my mom was like, oh, my God, stop talking about that. And, you know, like, I want to know. Like, I care about you. I want to know, are you getting checked for this? Once you reach a certain age, breast cancer is a massive, major concern.
Right.
Fortunately, breast cancer does not run in my family, so my optimism is that my mom will not experience that. But were she to be one of the unfortunate individuals who is faced with that struggle, I want to know sooner rather than later, and so we can tackle it head on. Same thing with my own personal health. And for our listeners, I want you guys to know that nobody can shame you if you are the first one to just claim it. This right. This is something that happened to me. It doesn't make me a horrible person. It means that I had an HPV, which much of our society has on some level. And if you happen to be one of the individuals who have a high grade, potentially like a potential melanoma, go get it looked at. And I say that from experience, because when we first discovered this 5 years ago, I was so afraid, and I felt the shame that comes with, oh my God, like there's something defective with my sniz, or my asshole's got some problem or whatever. And I did not want to deal with it. So 5 years later, it had progressed. Luckily, it hadn't progressed to a situation that was going to be truly problematic. But do not, like, let yourself fall into the same situation I did, where shame prevents you from taking the best care of yourself you possibly can. You know what I mean? So that's why I wanted to talk about it, get it out of the way right away on this thing. The other part of that is the person who is sober, like, the doctor said, like, Pearl was just mentioning the oxycodone that was prescribed to me. Those are high-level narcotics. And she was like, you know, I'm very upfront about being a sober individual, not doing drugs or alcohol with my doctors. And so she normally would have prescribed 40 pills. I was like, nope, I want 20. And I told people that are close to me.
Gave them to me?
Girl, you did not need to be in on any more pain pills. You're barely mentally present to begin with, bitch.
Whatever, bitch.
But I only ended up taking, I think, 6 of them. And
so you don't need it anymore, do you?
Put him down, you bitch. Girl, she's going to have one pearl teeny, 16 pills, and we're going to lose her, too. It's going to be like George Michael all over again. Never. But I was very upfront about my situation again. Like, you have to be honest with your caretakers all the way across the board. So I basically took, I think, 4 the first day because of the fact that they were very clear on the possibility of pain. And then once, a couple days later, I was like, I'm really not in a lot of pain. So at most, like, I take one at night just in case, like, because I've been coughing a lot lately. And so I was like, I don't want to, like, accidentally cough and, like, blow out my pooter.
So, that's a mess.
Oh, my God. Speaking of pooters. Did you read on Facebook about Putinesca and pheromones and Amora?
Yes, girl. I didn't read about it. I heard about it, and everything ended up okay, thank God.
Right. So, you guys, our friend, Jose Guzman Colon, is a well-known photographer, and Amora Tees is, of course, Pearl's little sister, my niecey, and she was helping Jose
with his photo
with his photo shoot for pheromones and out of Las Vegas, and... You didn't hear from me, but she's on season 9. But, like, I just know that because I've seen all the inside sources.
Right.
No, she's never said anything. Nobody else has had to say anything. But she's going to be... We're going to be seeing a lot more of her. So she and Jose were doing a photo shoot, and they...
these two kids tried to, like, rob him of his camera. And
Jumped them, girl. Right. Straight up jumped them.
Luckily, Amara was there to help, like, get them off him and stuff. They still was able to, like, knock him down and stuff, but I think he was able to escape with all of his stuff.
Girl, they were trying to steal his camera and Pheromone's Louboutins.
They tried to steal her shoes?
Apparently so, because Jose had them in his hand, because Clinton's going to walk on Louboutins on the fucking sidewalk.
That's true.
So they saw that there were Louboutins and his camera, and they were trying to steal it all. And go on, Amora, for being butch, bitch. She jumped all up in there and ended up getting punched in the kisser, but it all worked out.
Right.
Apparently the swelling in her lips saved her hundreds of dollars in injections. She's like, yeah, lip job.
You know.
So, ridiculous, girl. It's one of those things, like, Jose lives in a place that's actually lovely on the inside and all this stuff, but it's right next to, some lower, lower-income housing type area, and it's just, whenever I'm over there in drag, I always am very mindful of it. But I don't even think it was completely dark, and they were, like, walking home or whatever, and got jumped.
Girl, I would have went ape shit.
I would have been, like, I don't know. It's one of those things where when I'm in drag, I'm the absolute wrong person to fuck with, because all of a sudden I really think that I'm Wonder Woman. I'm like, oh, no, you didn't, bitch! But out of drag, when you're threatened like that, it's very scary because you don't know what they've got. And, honey, people are crazy. In fact, I stopped at the 7-Eleven in the Castro today, and there were police outside the 7-Eleven in the Castro, and they had been police there hours before in front of the 7-Eleven. And as it turns out, there were two separate unrelated events on the corner by the 7-Eleven, in which one of them, a guy had come into the 7-Eleven being like, call 911, she stabbed me. And the woman behind the counter was like, what? What's going on? And the guy opened up his jacket and started spurting blood. And a woman who lived in an adjacent building to the 7-Eleven had stabbed him, I guess, with an ice pick.
Wow.
So the police showed up, and, like, the place was blocked off for a couple hours, and they finally found her and carted her off to jail. And just after they had reopened, then some other guy came in and threatened the cashier, and then the police came again, and there he was on the sidewalk in handcuffs, too. I was just like, people are crazy in this day and age. Right now, people are going nuts.
And this is why I try to leave Poyo's house as early as possible.
I'm not going to stab you, you whore.
I'm talking about your neighbors, girl. Girl, on my way here, I got hit on by, like, a guy walking the opposite direction of me. And I've plenty of times I've had guys, like, pull over.
Well, that's because you look like a prostitute.
No, I don't, girl. I wear regular clothes, you guys. I do not wear...
For a prostitute.
No, bitch.
No, you know... Okay, this is going to make Pearl feel real antsy and whatever, but... Maybe 8 or 10 years ago.
Here she goes.
8 or 10 years ago.
I don't know.
It was in the middle of the night here, and all of a sudden I heard gunshots. I was pretty sure they were gunshots. And I ran outside to see what was going on, and I saw a person run down my street.
I'm not even going to say, like, if it was, you heard gunshots, and your reaction was to run and see what it was?
I'm white. You know.
Yes, I was going to say it, but I was going to let you say it, girl. No, you don't. That's how you get killed.
I was like, I ran outside. A guy goes running past, and then just then I see a man about 5 houses up stagger and collapse onto the sidewalk, and he had been shot and murdered right across the street from me.
Oh my god!
And so yeah, the neighborhood is pretty nice in general, but you know, crazy things happen, and we have no control over who our neighbors are or what's going on. But I did. I recognized that. I was like, okay, I'm clearly white because black people do not run towards the gunshot. No.
Right. Get down, bitch.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
No.
So, it was madness, girl. And that same night, it was so weird because the police were coming, had come, and of course, I had to go out and talk to them because I'd seen somebody run away. And then this car came swooping up the street and then saw the cop cars and slammed on his brakes and, like, tried to get away and ended up ripping his whole front bumper off. It was so weird. It was, like, a very... So I think they were returning to make sure that the job had been done.
Was done. Oh, my God.
Yes, girl. It was a mess. And that's just, like, I live in a perfectly normal, vain neighborhood most of the time.
Right.
But... And this... even as I say this, then it just occurred to me that 6 or so years ago, there was this big news breaking in the Bay Area. A family, like a father and two sons, had pulled up to a stop sign, and somebody pulled up next to them and shot all three of them dead.
No.
Do you remember this on the news? It was like, it was in the Bay Area on the news, like a dad and his one teenage son and one who was like maybe 20, early 20s. Somebody, and it, as it turned out, they had been mistaken. It was a mistaken identity. They were mistaken for someone else. But that literally happened at the end of my street in one block up.
Really?
And I didn't even know it. Like, I saw it all over the news, but I had no idea. It was like...
Exactly.
Yeah. And it was literally, like, less than two blocks from me. Stupid shit happens. I think most people are more likely to get killed in this case of mistaken identity than somebody actually wanting to kill them.
Right.
Or crossfire or some stupidity. So... My God.
Oh, her fucking zoo.
The zoo, indeed. All right, you guys. We are going to get ready to take a quick break. I do want to give another plug. Remember, Pearl, the return of Pearl Tees Remastered is going to be this Sunday, January 22nd, at the cafe for the Glamour Zone.
9:45.
Yes, and if you are a new performer and you are interested in getting to make your debut at the cafe during my Glamour Zone show, please contact me, because the following Sunday, January 29th, is the New Talent Showcase number 17. So it's going to be the biggest prize in our history of our contest.
Right, girl. You know when I ran, there was no prizes. I got nothing.
You got $100.
No, I didn't.
Didn't you?
Nope. There was no prize.
Well, girl, they're getting more than $100 this time. And they're getting some prizes. So I'm working on it. I'm trying to get them some big prizes. But the reality is, we've already got 7 performers or 8 performers. I want to get it up to 10 or 12. So I'm still on the lookout. So if you're new and you're considering making your debut at the cafe, please let me know. We're looking for more talent.
Girl, I would live if you have like a... Well, I mean, no, never mind.
What?
Nothing. But you guys, come out this Sunday to Pearl Tees Remastered presented by the Glamazon. It'll be, of course, Pollo Del Mar hosting, and we're going to have Natalie Ray and Kipper Snacks performing alongside with us.
Yes! All right, you guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Oh, she really came that way? All right. My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right.
I'm known as the Vanessa Williams of drag.
All right.
I need to get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Styles Radio.
I don't get cute. I get drop dead gorgeous.
Welcome back to more Party Style Radio, everyone. I'm Poya Del Mar. And Pearl teases off, taking a moment to massage her bosoms while I take you to a pre-recorded interview. And I am so ecstatic. I cannot explain to you exactly how excited I am at the moment. To be introducing our first interview this week, she is a legendary sex symbol of iconic proportions. She spent 4 years on WKRP in Cincinnati playing the absolutely gorgeous Jennifer Marlowe, which earned her 3 Golden Globe and 2 Primetime Emmy nominations. Then, throughout the 80s, she and Burt Reynolds comprised one of Hollywood's all-time greatest super couples. They made headlines around the world and captured the attention of fans everywhere. And now she is returning with a new project. It's a 6-episode spread of an internet episodic called My Sister Is So Gay. Lonnie Anderson stars as the mother of a gay son and an uptight right-wing daughter who, after discovering that her husband is cheating on her with her best friend, returns to the nest only to begin uncovering what is perhaps her own hidden sexual identity. She is co-starring with singer Silky Jones, who many might remember from Nashville, as well as the uproariously hilarious Deborah Wilson, who you must remember from her days on Mad TV as the cracked out Whitney Houston and the overly energetic Oprah Winfrey. You can check all of this out on Tello Films, that's TelloFilms.com, to see Lonnie Anderson in 6 episodes of My Sister Is So Gay. And now to talk to an entirely new generation, perhaps, of LGBT viewers and listeners, please welcome to Party Pal Radio the incredible Lonnie Anderson.
Yes, Lonnie Anderson.
I am so ecstatic to be speaking to you right now.
thrilled. Thank you.
You know, I not to like put kind of an age range on your impact, but it's times like this when I had the opportunity to speak with iconic celebrities such as yourself that I wish my father were still alive, because I grew up in the era where I was far too young to recognize the kind of sexual impact, for example, that women of your generation during the late 70s and early 80s had. But my father certainly took great notice.
I wish you were here too.
So I was also, I should probably throw in there, I was also far too gay, even at that age, to like really like probably think other than like, oh my gosh, she's so pretty, I want to be like her.
That's so wonderful. I like that. I met a young man at the Gay Men's Chorus just recently who said, you know, when I was a teenager, I thought I had a crush on you, and then I realized I just wanted to be you.
That is exactly the experience I think of every gay man. And, you know, I was going to ask you ultimately about your experiences working with Linda Carter, and I will get around to that. But when I was a child, I thought that I had a crush on Wonder Woman, and then I realized I wanted to be Wonder Woman.
You wanted to be Wonder Woman. See? And she's a lovely woman to have a crush on, I must say.
Yeah, I'm very blessed to have had the opportunity to interview her many times, and I do want to ask you about that, but I wanted to first ask you, you know, I mentioned the 70s and early 80s, and that seemed to be like a time when we had what I would consider true sex symbols on the television set every single week, because the lasting impact of shows like Charlie's Angels and Wonder Woman and your role on WKRP still persists to this day, you know, those. And I was really wondering what it was like to find yourself in the company every single week in magazines and other media with people like Farrah Fawcett and Linda Carter.
You know, and we were all around the same age, and we all knew one another, and Farrah and I had actually done an episode of a show called SWAT, which was each of our, I don't know, it was my first job, I think, on a series, and I was still a brunette. And she had not done Charlie's Angels. It was like in 75. And we got along just great. And then we worked together again on a show called Harry O with David Jansen. And she played his girlfriend, and she was a flight attendant. And I was her roommate and best friend. Then I went blonde, and we never worked together again.
It just seemed like that era, there's something missing on television today, because we have many beautiful celebrities today, but I struggle to think of anybody who has been elevated to quite the degree of international notoriety that all of you...
I think, you know, let's look at it. I mean, there are over 450 scripted television programs on. You couldn't possibly sample them all. And when we started, there were three networks, and pretty much a third of the country was going to see you. So there was the opportunity. We were destination television. Let's go home at 9 o'clock. This is our favorite show. We all gather around the TV. It's just such a different era that I think maybe that's the end of that kind of notoriety for television celebrities, really. And it's just different.
You know, honestly, I had never really thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I sit down and turn on my TV Guide channel or whatever, and there's literally hundreds of channels to choose from, versus when I was a child, there really were, like, only
the three. The big three?
Yeah. So.
And then Fox came in. I mean, it was just that those were your choices in that 3 hours of primetime television. And everybody was fighting over it. If you got renewed, it was a miracle. I think the year that WKRP started in 78, only Taxi, Mork and Mindy, and Vegas, out of the umpteen hundreds of pilots that were done, remained on television. So it was really amazing kind of celebrity. And I wasn't prepared for it at all, but I never will regret it.
it's, you know, the interesting thing, I'm thinking about this, and you mentioned those three shows, and I can name the sex symbol, the female sex symbol, the female lead from every one of those shows.
Yeah.
And two of them were redheads, so you guys, you blondes had competition that year.
And who knew I was going to be blonde? That was the other thing. I had experimented all through the 70s with different hair color since I started out brunette. And really, Jennifer Marlowe was my... we did the pilot. I wasn't quite blonde enough. And by the second episode, I was a blonde. And then I was that forever. And now I see young actresses are much more chameleon-like. They change their hair color all the time, and they become different people. We had kind of a whole image thing going on.
Well, right. I think that, and I certainly think that, I was going to mention that, you know, you still somewhat play to that image even now. You know, you're still, I shouldn't probably reveal your age, but...
It's okay.
You're still...
You know, it comes after your name from the time you become a celebrity. And I'm proud to be 71 years old. And to still have people say that I was at dinner just last night, and a woman yelled, "I love you." And I thought, if women are still yelling, "I love you," and here I am, a grandma and everything else, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Well, it's something that I think that after a while, many women would just be like, "Oh, the hell with it. I'm over it." You know, but... But it's something
I have to tell you, Barbara Eden is a good friend of mine.
Oh,
and,
love.
And years ago we said, okay, should we stay cute or should we become like character actresses? And we said, let's be cute. And so it's a different road. You have to watch what you eat and you have to exercise and take care of your skin and keep your roots dyed. And it's just a big responsibility to maintain yourself.
But, you said keep your roots dyed.
It just is never ending. But I like looking like me. I like that people still know who I am. They don't go... Jim Neighbors once told me he was in an airport and a little kid came up to him and said, "Are you Gomer Pyle's dad?" And so far, nobody has asked me if I'm Jennifer Marlowe's mother.
Oh, my goodness.
But I wouldn't mind.
No.
But I like looking like myself.
Yeah.
And it's very nice. I've enjoyed every moment of this, whatever happened to me in 1978.
You know, in a way, though, it almost is as if you are a character actress because you play that character. That, you know, you play yourself in many ways, or rather you've adopted that character as yourself.
Yes. And I love being an actress, I have to tell you, because I am just kind of a regular mom, grandma, Minnesota girl, eating right and doing all the right things and not drinking or smoking or all that kind of stuff. And I get to play characters that do outrageous things, and that's what being an actress is all about, and that's what I want to do, pretend. I'm not too much into reality TV. I want to play a part. Somebody else. I don't want to be me. That's enough. I do that around the house all the time.
So, you know, going back, I have to ask you about the Wonder Woman and Linda Carter connection. And I was...
Oh, we had the best time together.
I was an avid watcher, by the way, of Partners in Crime. I remember with the whole, I don't know if it was a cello or what, the giant violin type thing with the,
I had a bass. I played a bass.
So.
I was in a jazz trio. And I was a pickpocket. I could pickpockets. I could do, I had been raised by a con man. My dad had been a con man. And Linda Carter's character was the aristocrat. And we both had been married to the same guy. He left us his detective agency when he died. And there we were in our high heels running up and down the streets of San Francisco in our little tight skirts saying, "Freeze." I mean, we were just having a blast. Detective.
And, you know, of course, the tie, how would I have ever known when I was 10 years old watching that I would be living in San Francisco, running up and down those same hills in same high heels in the same tight skirt?
How spectacular.
Life has come full circle.
<It does. laughs>
throughout your career, you have, like I said, played this very sexy role. And even now with your new project, My Sister Is So Gay, you are playing, once again, a very sexy role at 71.
Can you believe it at this time in my life? And but it's so funny to be a perpetually tipsy. I mean, I carry the ice bucket and all the makings for martinis in my purse. And I have, you know, and I'm promiscuous, and I have little mini skirts and plunging necklines and animal prints. And but, you know, as outrageous and flawed as this woman is, she loves her kids. And she accepts them. They're both gay. Excuse me, both gay. And she just is, like, all for it. So she's progressive in their face a little bit too much, but it's just a great character for me to play.
Throughout your career, you've been known for being a little bit choosy for the type of roles that you've selected for television.
Yes.
So what about this particular role at this time in your life? And it's not even on television. It's just this incredible web series that attracted
you.
You
know, good is wherever it is where I'd like to be. If, you know, when I was a little kid and we put on shows in the garage and charged the neighbors a nickel, it was because you have a passion to do something good or to work or sing or dance or whatever. And I get a lot of scripts that are nice moms and nice grandmas and snooze time, and I don't want to compromise myself. I've had some wonderful, I'm spoiled. I've had wonderful shows to be on, great writers, fantastic producers and directors. So I don't want to, peter out, water it down, I guess. So when this came to me, it didn't matter where it was or anything else. It was just that it made me laugh out loud. I love Terry Ray, who we both have a wonderful friend, Charles Nelson Reilly, who's gone now, and he had been Charles' student, and he also, Terry and I did a show together called The Mullet. But he wrote this wonderful script and said, will you do it? And it was kind of like, where do I go? I don't care if it's in your backyard or whatever. I just want to be part of it.
And the subject matter, as you said, it's this woman who has one son who she knows is gay. And from everything I've read, because you guys, it's not out yet, it's his sister comes to live with him, and then the suspicion begins about her own sexuality.
Yeah, that she doesn't even realize that she is and has been a lesbian all of her life, and it's her realization of it.
So, I mean, beyond the fact that you were well connected with the writer and you have these strong personal relationships, what about the subject matter? I mean, one would think that the subject matter of the LGBT themes and such would be speaking to you as well, for you to want to be part of it.
I definitely want to be part of it. A community I've been very much involved with all of my career. You have to remember that I was a gypsy. I was on stage. I worked in New York. So this is a community that's family for me. And I always say, when people ask, what is your political party? I always say, I'm a card-carrying member of the Civil Rights Party, because that's who I am. That's what I want, and whatever party represents that, that's the one I want to be involved with. And so this was important to me, to be recognized in this community in a positive way.
You know, I was going to ask you, and you in many ways already answered it, like the evolution of this relationship, that you seem to really have this connection with the LGBT community, because going back, I recall, for example, the first time I got giddy and had the opportunity to speak with Linda Carter, and I asked her that question, and she told me that it wasn't until years after Wonder Woman was canceled, for example, like probably in the mid-80s, when she realized her place and the influence that she had within the LGBT community. Yet it sounds like you kind of understood and grasped that much, much sooner.
I did. I think it was something I always knew. And it was especially clear, well, my character was glamorous, but I think it was especially clear when I played Jane Mansfield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she certainly was iconic.
And remains so.
And has remained so. And so what a treat to play her. and get to know Mariska, as a matter of fact. And then I also met with Mickey Hargitay, and to be embraced by the family, so flattering, so wonderful. Arnold was a blast.
And who would have known at that time, certainly, what an impact Mariska Hargitay would have long term?
I know. Isn't she fabulous? Oh, fabulous. We got to work together, actually, on Gambler 5 with Kenny Rogers.
The fact that there was even a Gambler 5 is amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
Truly. You talk about this character that you're playing who... she's flawed and all these things, but she very deeply loves her family. And you have a very clear love for your children as well. I know that you spent a number of years actually touring and speaking out about some family issues, and have since with your... it's your daughter who came...
My daughter has MS.
Yes, and that has become another talking point for you. And I was just wondering if you could share a little bit about, you know, the experience of bringing... greater awareness cause that's clearly close to home.
Well, you know, that is, I think, the best cause for all of us to be involved in, is one that touches us personally. And as celebrities, you want to have some clout so that you can bring recognition to something, so you don't want to spread yourself too thin. And I don't know how anybody gets by in life without being personally affected by something. But this has been very important to me because I see what she's going through, and she's doing really great, by the way. And, you know, as a mother, you want to protect your children from everything. You want to fix it. So I had to get over myself and realize that I just had to support her and listen to her and use my celebrity to bring awareness to it, to raise money, find a cure.
I love the fact that you actually say that you don't understand how people could go through life without being personally affected by something. And I think that it's something that, while many people probably, like everybody probably is, it takes a very, I think, a very kind and very empathetic individual to take time away from their own life to dedicate time to awareness or raising funds. And I think that one of the things I love about the LGBT community is that we do that on an ongoing basis.
You definitely, absolutely, I'm 100% agree with you on that.
I think that that's what makes us a community, if you will, because we see the
and
things.
Yes, you are. Congratulations for that.
Thank you. I'll accept the award for all of us. Now, going back really quickly to My Sister Is So Gay, you guys have amassed a really incredible cast of people as well. So this is a small project that you guys have already filmed 6 episodes that I'm aware of, and maybe more. But
just to 6. Wait. We just want to get people's reaction to it, because we all loved it. We want everybody else to love it too.
Right. And you have an insanely funny cast of individuals. I'm aware of, like, Deborah Wilson has got a...
oh, she's so funny. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. And again, like, with talking ties to the LGBT community, her portrayal of the, I don't even know what state of affairs Whitney was in when she's being portrayed, is so legendary within the LGBT community. You know, the, show me the receipts, Diane, quotes.
For me, I loved being with her on the set, even when we weren't shooting, because she is so naturally, hysterically funny. And, you know, it's so fun to be around people who, well, as we all know, laughter extends your life. So to be around people who are extending your life is a joy. And she is one of those people. She just makes you laugh out loud.
During your career, especially in the 80s, it would be fair to say that you were one of Hollywood's greatest super couples, if you will.
Yes.
And I was curious, because we still see that today. We see the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, and we see the Brad Pitt and, you know, whoever. You know, like, we see this. And
it's kind of a Hollywood thing, huh?
It really is. And I was wondering what it was like to actually have to weather that storm from the inside.
Well, I think weathering any... the storm of the fact that Bert used to say we were the top of the wedding cake, that sometimes that the sum of the two of you is so much greater than you are even as individuals because of that super couple kind of thing, that people go quadruply crazy when you're together. That was, you know, a very interesting 12 years in my life. And then to go through such a public divorce, other people go through divorces, but not so public. And, but, you know, you just turn to yourself in the mirror and you say, you're tough, you're strong, you're not a victim, you will get through this, whatever it is, and come out the other side. And that's what I say, I think, every day. I'm tough. I am not a victim.
Oh my gosh, you like, those are all things that I have to remind myself on a regular basis. You know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah.
Like, life is not happening to you, it's happening, and how you get through it is up to you.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that
exactly. And here's another thing, this is my New Year's thing. I'm a planner. And I decided that I plan too much and miss the actual moment. Like, I could be so busy planning that I wouldn't appreciate the existing moment. And how awful is that, that you're not really living life. It's just a plan for the next thing. So that's my goal this year, is to just enjoy the moment. Because we've lost a lot of people this year. We, you know, and people we've loved, and I had to think back on the moments that I spent laughing hysterically with Debbie Reynolds or with Florence Henderson, and then you just, and I've just seen Alan Thicke recently, and you just have to appreciate every moment.
Yeah, it's from the perspective of individuals such as myself, you know, we wake up and we see the names of these incredible stars that we've lost, or especially 2016 seemed to truly take a toll. And then from, you know, for us, there's an emotional impact because, not unlike yourself, like, your work has defined eras and generations of our lives. But from the flip side of that is, you know, to some degree or another, each and every one of you in Hollywood seems to be connected or have worked together, or neighbors. Or
it's,
you know,
true. It's a very small community. The people that last seem to be, you just see one another over and over again. And there have been a few people that kind of burned brightly and just went away. And then the rest of us that are, I think, the troopers that just kept going, we do have connections with one another.
Yeah, I would have to say that, you know, you mentioned the thing that people burn brightly and then go away. It's that we see that existences of situations of that, but you're somebody who burned, like I said, it was the era or generation as we talked about, but there were so many of you who burned so bright, you know, it was like intense, and yet you remain. And
yes,
it's inspirational.
And you know what? And I think about the people that are going through that now, and you know that celebrity just lasts. If you get to that point in celebrity, it's there forever. And there might be a 20-year-old who doesn't know who you are, but as long as your audience is still alive, that's it. That's part of who you are. And you just have to marvel at it, because you can't get it if you want it, and you can't make it go away if you want to, and it's intangible.
It's true, because, you know, there are people who are in the acting industry and or the Hollywood industry, and you think of them, for example, if you looked at their resume, you would say, oh, they're very successful, but you couldn't, per se, think of them in a role or something like that nature. You know what I mean? And then, and that means they've been a successful actor, but they've never necessarily been defined by the industry. And then there are other people who have had, even if it's one role that was so iconic or so omnipresent in the pop culture lexicon that the industry didn't define them, they defined the industry. And there are people far more from the eras that we talked about in the 70s and 80s and even in the early 90s, I would say that exist in that realm than there would ever be today.
And I think it's just the nature of our technology that's made that happen. Everyone's accessible. Your phone, you can make yourself your own celebrity by just posting and Snapchatting and tweeting and none of that was available. And so I just don't see that returning, obviously. And we were lucky. I'm really grateful that I was a part of that.
Before we did this interview, I was reading up and I was thinking about those, what I would consider iconic television roles. And I had no idea until today, when I read about it, that you were being considered at one point for a role on Designing Women. Talk about, because to me, that's another iconic television moment. That's an iconic.
Absolutely.
And I had no idea that you were being considered at the time for the replacement of Delta Burke. So I was like, oh.
You know, those things that are just the sliding doors, you know, the things that almost happen. And you think, oh, I could have gone that way, or I could have been critical, that you get that propels you to something wonderful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could have been on Designing Women. You could have been Chrissy on Three's Company. I mean, I look at this, and you were destined for what, you know what I mean? It was a destiny thing.
It was funny. When I lost out to Suzanne Summers, and then I did the show right before I did WKRP, Suzanne Summers was the one who said to me, it's your turn. You know, it's going to be your time soon. And she was right. It was like a month later. And I don't know. I don't envy all of these young people because trying to be actors and actresses, because when I went into a room, there were 25 people to compete with that the casting directors had called in, and now there are 2,500 people that have posted some kind of audition. I just don't know how it's going to happen for these people.
Well, quite fortunately, there's 7,000 roles being cast at any given time for shows that I've never heard of.
I know that I could have a best friend on something, it's so embarrassing, and never have seen it. It's like, we're in our fifth season, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I've never even seen that. And so, again, the different climate.
And that's really true. And there are other situations where people will say, oh, we're in our fifth season, and I'll think to myself, oh my gosh, I've never seen one episode.
Never seen one episode.
Or even worse, when I'm like, oh, I know them. They're still on, like, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond. They're like, that show was canceled like 18 years ago.
Right.
And I'm like, who knows?
No, we can't keep track of it.
So
I'm glad that you like all of, as we know that everybody loves, like, Cozy and Me and Antenna and all of these new networks that are popping up. Because we're comfortable with those shows.
Well,
we have people that we love and plots we understand.
We've talked about the obvious downside of technology today and the advances of what's happening in entertainment, because you're right, with very few exceptions, there will never be another set of people who have reached the level of celebrity. By celebrity, of course, I think we both mean, like, the fame that comes with a body of work. But every few years, you might get a cast of Friends, for example, or whatever. But the positive side is that there are so many networks that give wonderful quality shows that speak to audiences like the LGBT community, like the African-American community. They give those audiences a voice and an opportunity that they would not get, for example, if they were fighting for those 3 hours of primetime television.
That is exactly right. So there is much more opportunity. I'm glad of that. I just, for me, I wish I had somebody that would come over and say, okay, you need to check this out, and now you need to check that out. And because reviewers say there aren't enough hours in the day for them to sample the programming to even recommend it.
Well, and I recently read something, you know, everybody does the list of, for example, like the 10 best shows or whatever, but I read one, because of my personality, that said something like the 20 worst shows that critics had watched, and even that person gave a caveat saying, these are just the shows that are on networks that you probably are aware of. You know, I watched other, the person was like, said that there were so many things that there's no way one person could potentially, there's just not enough hours in the week.
No, so we hope that everybody picks out either a person they like, or a cause they like, or a voice they want to hear, and checks it out.
Yes, and you know what, I'm so grateful for the time you spent with us today, and thank you for, good grief, decades and decades of just being yourself for us, and it is even more rewarding knowing that you're fully aware and on board with the fact that you have such a revered place within the LGBT community, and now
it is my honor.
And now you get to be on a program that we can watch and laugh with you, and see an all new.
And I'll keep
version.
Looking for those, all of those shows that somehow touch me or make me laugh, because humor to me is the best medicine, and comedy is my favorite thing to do.
Well, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, everybody. That was the incredible Miss Lonnie Anderson joining us to talk about her new webisode series called My Sister is So Gay. By all means, please go check out these episodes. Visit tellofilms.com. That's TELLOFILMS.com to catch Lonnie Anderson, Tilkey Jones, Deborah Wilson, and an entire cast directed by the prolific Sam Ervin. It is now available. Well, it will be available starting January 22nd. And we look for much more from Lonnie Anderson and the entire cast of My Sister is So Gay. We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Pay attention at the back there. Sister Bang Bang here, all the way from Manchester in the UK, the yuck. My little podcast radio show is called Chinwag, and each week I have a chinwag. That's a long chat for those of you who don't know your Chanel from your Balenciaga. You'll love it, though. So, kids, get along to our website to hear Chinwag, www.themanchestersisters.org.
And hear me dish the dirt.
www.themanchestersisters.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Miss Pearl Del Mar.
Oh, my gosh, sorry about it. I'm Pearl Tease. She tried it.
And we're really excited. As I mentioned earlier in the episode, we have had a serious lack of influential women on our podcast of late, and we are...
Besides myself.
Besides Pearl, exactly. And we're doing our best to rectify it at this time. And as I told you earlier, our next guest has such a compelling backstory. In addition to a prolific career as a surf rock guitarist, which she has become so proficient at that she has surpassed any labels in terms of her gender, but she has this prolific career in music, but she also comes from a law enforcement background working with the FBI. I was so intrigued because as a child, I too wanted to be part of the FBI. Please welcome at this time the beautiful Miss Susan Surftone. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. When I was reading your bio, it indicated that when you first became interested in pursuing a career in the FBI, that they did not even allow women at that time.
They allowed them. They had been when Hoover died, they decided they had to let women in. I think women had been in about 8 years before I went in, but there were very, very few. The thing was, they didn't allow anyone who was gay. Back then, they decided that being gay made you a security risk. So you couldn't get a top secret clearance if you were gay. So you weren't supposed to be gay, but there were a number of them.
Wait, so I'm... Okay. Did they ever explain what about being gay makes a person a security risk? Because that's like...
Well, this was the problem I always had with them, because they said you could be compromised if you were gay. Like if, say the Russians found out you were gay. and they could compromise you because you were gay. But the thing was, if it wasn't a problem in the first place, then they couldn't compromise you.
Yeah, but I don't...
So the fact that they made it a problem, that the FBI made it a problem, you know. So it was like, just stop making it a problem and we'll be okay. And eventually they did. So they are now openly gay, which I'm glad to say.
I don't even understand. I'm still trying to figure out how it is that, like, that we're more compromisable as members of the LGBT community than anybody else. Like,
I have no idea. I could never figure it out.
Maybe.
Well, then when you found out about Uber, it was really funny.
Exactly. He's like, gay people should not be allowed. Now, please get out. I must cross-dress.
I can't.
So... I know that you actually were in active duty as a member of the FBI for a number of years. Like, it sounds like they have really screwed up things, because not only did they not want people who are gay, but they also didn't want people who apparently are musicians either.
No, they never, again, compromise. Compromise is a big word.
Wow.
I was 28 years old, I think. And I wanted to eventually start a career in music, and time was been marching on, so I had to get going here. And I did talk to them about playing in clubs like CBGB, and there was a club down the street from CB called Great Gilder's Place. And of course, if you play in the clubs as a musician, you can be compromised because there's drugs and bad people in the club.
Oh, yes, my.
Well, as we all know, there are drugs and bad people in the FBI, but we've talked about that. And, so again, it was a choice. Either, you stay in the bureau and give up music, or give up any sort of music professionally, or quit. So I decided I didn't want to stay. I knew it wasn't going to be a lifetime career for me, because I couldn't live that way. So it was, an easy decision to decide to go to CPG.
I'm kind of sitting here, and I'm, just dumbfounded, because, everything's... I'm sorry, you cannot... go to McDonald's, because you could be compromised at McDonald's. especially if you are a lesbian musician. Musicians are especially susceptible.
Compromised all the time.
Oh, girl, now. So you finally just, in what year was it that you finally decided to leave and start your music career?
It was, I think, the tail end of 82.
Wow.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was in from 80 through 82. I think I got my credentials on January 10th.
This might
be my anniversary.
Oh.
So I went in on January 10th. So I got my
creds
on May 1st. So this is,
yes,
this is an anniversary date.
Happy
there
anniversary!
There
we go.
I really just loved the parts of your story, though, in terms of your efforts to actually even sort of get into the Bureau, because, of course, it goes without saying that to be a member of the FBI, it's very stringent regulations and all of these, big, big hoops you have to jump through. And you did so well as a marksman or a markswoman, I guess. And you just, every obstacle that was presented with you as a challenge, you just hit it head on.
You had to do it. I mean, if you wanted to get the credentials, you had to do it. And it was fun, actually. The training part of it was a lot of fun. Learning to shoot was fun, and I was glad I did it. You took it as it came, and you had to do it. That's all I enjoyed. We had the box, and my partner was one of the smaller guys, and, we're kind of living that down, that he got a time to box for the woman, but my father is an athlete. He was a professional baseball player for the Brooklyn Dodgers in the minor league teams in the late 40s and 50s, and since I was an only child with a proclivity to boys' activities, he taught me a lot of sports, so he taught me how to box. When I went into the Bureau, I already knew how to do it, and I could take a punch, so I was assigned to one of the guys as my partner. That was kind of fun. And, you just had to do what you had to do. I enjoyed it. That part of it I enjoyed.
Yeah, I think that for all of us who, when we're put in direct opposition to people who clearly want us to fail, there is... especially within the LGBT community, we have a real strong desire to prove people wrong. Like, the more you say I can't, the greater I'm going to do at this.
Right.
And you know you have to be very good at what you do.
Right.
Yes.
So you get, yeah, you just get better and better at what you have to do. And I found that with the guitar playing. So that plays in a very male-dominated genre, a very straight genre. Mm-hmm. And I just had to keep getting better at it, which kind of motivated me just to angle up in certain music, too, being a woman. My God, that was tough. And when they finally, found out I was gay, some of them, oh my God. So, some were very accepting, some had no problem at all. So, it depended on the individual, but I certainly had to, do everything I could to keep improving and get better.
Surf music is like a subgenre of a subgenre almost. How is it that you kind of honed in on that being your calling, your specialty?
Well, when I was learning to play, I started to learn to play the guitar when I was 9 back in 1964 when the Beatles had come over. And I had no desire to be a singer. I had a very low singing voice, and it was discouraged in our school for choir because my voice was too low. And I really didn't see myself as a singer, but I liked Beatles, I liked Elvis Presley a lot, and I wanted to be Elvis. And,
fair enough.
It was a good job. I kind of wanted to be Elvis. And my guitar teacher started to show me songs by The Ventures, like Walk, Don't Run, and Diamond Head, and all those instrumentals they were doing. And I really liked that idea. Wow, here I could be, kind of out front, and I learned to play the melody lines, I learned to play the rhythm guitar, and I could play both together, and that was fun. And yeah, that's how I got into surf music. I liked the clean melodic sound that created an instrumental band where you didn't have to have that singer. So my playing sort of gravitated that way, and as I was learning to play, the combination of the Beatles, Elvis, their music, and then when I put my first few bands together in New York City in the 80s after leaving the Bureau, I did have a vocalist in the band, and she could sing like Walker and she looked like Bowie, so that was an interesting combination. And we played around in New York City quite a bit, and that was fun. And then as time went on, the singers come and go and everything. I got a little tired of always breaking in a new singer. So by the time, I think it was like 1995, I decided I wanted to try an instrumental surf band. And my timing was perfect because that's when Pulp Fiction came out and brought the old Dick Dale song, Never Lose, to public attention again. And what they call the third wave of surf music was launched. So my timing was finally good at something, and there I was, in the middle of it.
Oh, right.
But and after doing this instrumental style of career music for most of the duration, you have started to venture back into writing and doing vocals.
Yeah, it's the first time I recorded my first vocal song about a year ago, and it's on my current EP, The Magician. I decided that kind of like back in when I left the Bureau, it was one of these, like, I'm either going to do it now or I'm never going to do it. And I wanted to give it a try. So I did, and people seemed to like it. I mean, I'll keep doing it until they tell me to stop. So,
that a girl.
Everybody seems to like it. I just recorded, finished up yesterday, the last two songs on my EP that'll probably be released like around April. It's called Making Waves Again. And I've got four vocal songs on that one and two instrumentals, so people seem to like it. I'm still getting used to the idea. I still don't really consider myself a vocalist, but I do Elvis songs and I do my originals, and it's fun. I gotta say, I do enjoy it.
Well, yeah, I think, we've done, just finished an interview right before speaking with you, and in that I said that I feel like quite often if we don't have either people who challenge us or we don't challenge ourselves to continue trying something new or stepping outside of that little box that we can put ourselves in, you know what I mean, mentally or spiritually or however it is, how we perceive ourselves, we may not be given an opportunity to grow. And this sounds like an opportunity for you to grow in your career.
Yeah, it is. It's a whole different way of looking at things. And the it was, you know, I like doing the surfing shit. I don't know, in fact, I've got a new one that I just wrote on the new record. I like doing them, but I couldn't see doing just that anymore. I really wanted to try something different, and like I said, I was either going to do it now or I was never going to do it. And I knew if I didn't do it, I'd regret not having tried. That was the same thing that I was thinking back when I was 28 and I left the Bureau. If I don't pursue music, I'm not going to be happy, and I don't want to look back and say I didn't do what I wanted to do, or at least try it.
Yeah. Isn't it an Elvis song, It's Now or Never? Is that an Elvis song? Or is that Roy
Elvis? That's an Elvis song, and the song that I recorded on the new record, and it's also a single release, is the B-side of It's Now or Never. It's a song called A Mess of Blues. So, yeah, It's Now or Never.
So,
well, financially, leaving the FBI has to be really difficult if you were going into the music industry.
Back when I was in, we didn't make that much money, to tell you the truth.
Oh.
That wasn't a big motivator. And living in New York City, your money didn't go very far, so that wasn't a difficult decision.
And having a second job would have compromised you, so you couldn't...
Oh, yeah, of course.
If you can't pay your bills, I'm sorry, that's your problem, but don't be compromised.
Right.
So, I also know that in addition to your work in music, you frequently contribute op-ed pieces to places as diverse as Curve Magazine, to The Advocate, to even The Huffington Post, where I'm also a contributor. And you seem to, in most of those, it predominantly focus your attention on politics. So,
yes, I do. I've always followed politics. Ever since I was a little kid, I really got into it. My mother was very into it, and she would talk about it with me a lot when I was young, and I picked up on her interest, and I've always read politics, read history. I'm a government major from Smith College, so, you know, it's just, I like it, I know it, and when I was, this summer when Hillary got nominated, the editor at The Advocate asked me if I would write an op-ed comparing myself to Hillary Clinton. And I was kind of flattered and honored, and here was my chance to write about politics. So I did. I did that piece. That's the one that Hillary is my sister. Because as I sat down to write it, I realized there were these things that we had in common that if I had had a sister, it could have been her. So I started writing it that way, and people seemed to like it. And then when the FBI became so prominent in the election and everything, I wrote another piece about my experience in the Bureau. And then I wrote one about the Electoral College, and I just wrote one in Curve about what I felt like. I have a lot of young women that ask me, like, how can they succeed if Hillary Clinton? So I wrote a piece called It Takes a Lot to Beat a Girl about Hillary's experience explaining just what we've been talking about, is that you have to keep trying and you have to keep excelling, and eventually you will get there. Because I think that Hillary certainly proved she was a better candidate. We know that. And I just think after all that's going on and that we're hearing in the news today, I just think that she's going to judge her very well. And one of the lessons is going to be all that it took to deny her the White House.
Yeah.
That's what the piece is about.
Yeah, I think that, I don't even think that we're going to make it to inauguration before people are... rethinking their vote in November. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, people are already thinking, what the hell did I do?
I know. The things that are coming out today are just really, they're really, I mean, I'm not surprised. And based on my background, I used to work for counterintelligence in New York City, and things that I'm hearing aren't surprising me. I wish I wasn't hearing them, but they are giving me a lot of concern, I have to tell you that. And I think that as we learn more, and I hope we learn more, and get a clearer picture, I think people are going to regret their vote.
Yeah, I think that, as individuals who are rather politically inclined and politically minded, I'm sure that it's a strong likelihood that you share my frustration that a lot of younger people within the LGBT community seem a bit complacent because they haven't had to struggle the way that people of generations previous, such as what you were talking about, being faced with the inability to be open in the workplace when you, you know, were hired with the FBI. Do you?
I agree with you completely. I mean, I think that it worries me that we've lost our, the lesbians have lost our culture, and that there are no more lesbian bars.
Oh my God, truly.
I think about, we used to, I mean, it was more than just having a drink and picking somebody up. I mean, it was where you went to talk to your friends, you met people, and it was a connection point for us, and now that that's gone, and chat groups and this and that on the internet just aren't the same thing. And I had the privilege of knowing Stormy LaVere. I think I'm saying her name right. The drag king that people say threw the first punch at Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
She worked the door at some of the clubs that I went to, and I had made friends with an older drag king named Nikki that knew her, so I was introduced to her. And when I heard the stories that these women told about how they had to live, they were in the, back in the generation where if you wore a few pieces of clothing that were from the opposite sex, you could get arrested.
Absolutely.
And it was just, it seems like it's gotten better quick for us, but we're going to go back really fast too. And it's a very scary time for us. And I was hoping that one thing I didn't like that the Clinton campaign did was I don't think they focused on our issues enough. It was like we were forgotten. Like it was done. And it's not done. But
it's
not done at all. I mean,
there's
still a lot of
Yes, and I would have to echo the thought that one of the shortcomings, in my opinion, about the Clinton campaign was that I think that it was sorely taken for granted that various minority groups were automatically going to support her, that Latinos would support her because Trump doesn't like Mexicans, or that women would support her because she's a woman, that gays and lesbians would support her because she's a Democrat. And I think that as opposed to focusing on some of the issues, you know, and actually talking about them, which would have strengthened her perspective in comparison, it was just taken for granted, and it became more of a mudslinging campaign about how dreadful he is. And that goes without saying, but there was little done to support why, in a practical sense, from a perspective of what legislation she wants to support, and otherwise she is a better candidate.
Well, right, and the thing that scared me is Mike Pence. He's going to be vice president.
Terrifying.
And I mean, if they, you know, when I hear them talk about, you know, like Trump will get impeached, then I think, then what do we get, Pence?
Right.
This is not good.
At all.
This is not what we want. You know?
Yeah.
And I wish that the Clinton campaign had focused more on that, that he's Pence is, you know, one, as they say, one heartbeat away. And he is, you know? And that scares me, because that guy's history is not good for us at all.
Quite the opposite. You know? So you bring up the fact that a lot of the lesbian culture seems to be disappearing, and I'm sorely aware of that as well here in San Francisco. There was a long period of time where we only even at that time had one lesbian-specific bar, the Lexington, which here in San Francisco was legendary. It's now gone. Where is lesbian culture disappearing to, Susan? Like, where do you see it as disappearing to?
I'd love to be able to find it, to tell you the truth. I live in Portland. I've been looking for a long time. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's almost like it's going behind closed doors, I guess. I'm not one much for chat groups and things, so maybe it's there. Maybe it's online. I don't know. But it seems to be disappearing. And I think back to the days, like in the 1980s when I lived in New York City, we had a bar, we had the Cubby Hole, which was legendary. That place was a lot of fun. And then there were bars, there was a bar called Fat Cats and a bar called Peaches, that if you were an older lesbian, you were welcome there. I mean, they were, God, Peaches was pretty much mostly older lesbians. Now there's just nothing. And it really concerns me, because if we need to find each other and we need to unite to do something about this new administration coming in, I don't know how we're going to do it. And I think we're
going to
regret that we let these things go.
Well, one of the things, you know, of course, there's as many stereotypes for lesbians as there are gay men, as there are for, you know, whatever. We're plagued by stereotypes. But most of the time, no matter like how superficial the stereotype might be, it's usually based in some kind of fact. And one of the stereotypes that has always been true of lesbians in such a comedic way, but in my opinion, for our culture as LGBT people, that has been so positive, is that lesbians have been about taking action and organizing and, you know, rallying against, you know, things that are not right, whether it was women's issues or, you know, the kind of support that was given to the gay community during the height of the AIDS crisis from the lesbian community and all of these things. And now I literally am almost completely oblivious to where the women are in our community.
Like I said, I don't know where they are. I do know I certainly enjoy watching Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. I mean, she's right. A strong voice, my God. And, I mean, she's there. It's a good thing we have her there.
I think
and Ellen and, like, Orange is the New Black, that's the entire lesbian community. I don't know.
I think that, you know, lesbian women have always kind of been there for, you know, everyone else in their issues. I think a lot of the issues is where were gay men when clubs like the Lexington were closing down? Where were they, you know, while they're going through their, like, disappearance of, like, where are they?
Well, I mean...
Where was the support from everybody else when they needed it?
Well, the only thing I can say in that defense is that, like, if gay men infiltrated the Lexington or any other lesbian club anywhere to show the support financially or whatever, then it would change the face of that organization. You know what I mean? Like that
yeah.
place. So
yeah.
I don't know if it means the gay community and the lesbian community are more closely integrated now, but I mean, I know that I see a lot of women go to places that are just general quote unquote gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
But it always, I always wonder, like, don't they want a place for themselves sometimes, too? I mean,
yeah, most definitely. I'm
yeah,
sure of it.
Yeah, I was thinking, when I lived in Boston, and I went to law school at BU, and I lived in Boston. In fact, my first job, field office, was in Boston when I went to the FBI. And the odd thing there was the bars in Boston at that time were very mixed of gay men and gay women. And we did have a couple of bars that were predominantly lesbian, but there was a lot of mixing, and that was fun. I really liked that. And when I moved to New York City, it was not that way at all. I mean, they were very separate. And I always thought it was more fun to be together, actually, and to be able to interact with each other. I had a good time. Some of the bars in Boston were a lot of fun.
Well, long before I moved to San Francisco, I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, and there was one fairly exclusive lesbian bar there. And I remember markedly when that bar closed down, and like the first maybe week afterwards, we got this all huge influx of women that we had literally never seen before, because until that point in time, they had their own place that they spent their time predominantly just with other women. And it really changed the mood and attitude. And at first it was not the greatest, but there was a little bit of, like, you know, culture clashing there. But after a while, it integrated and it seemed like a lot of fun. I know that there's a fair amount of that here in San Francisco. And I think that what I'm seeing, just as a casual observer, is that there is appears to be a bit of a divide between, based along what I would say, like, maybe it's like a femininity line. I don't know. Like, I know that, like, here there's a woman named Miranda Dan Sisson who I've worked with many times. She's lovely, but all of her friends tend to be of, like, the lipstick lesbian variety. And then there's, I don't know what the, I don't know the term, Susan. I'm, like, a little bit dumbfounded in that regard. But, you know, there seems to be a lot of divisions even within the lesbian community, perhaps, that would make it difficult for a place for everybody to gather mutually.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I do think you're right. I think there is a lot of division in it, and there's a lot of, I don't know, like,
but you know what?
I think there's a lot of judgment, too, that goes on among lesbians. It's like you have to meet certain criteria, and, you know, I don't, to tell you the truth. I don't know. I mean, I think the
same issue is there, like, even with gay men, like,
truly,
when it comes to masculinity versus femininity, is that, like, that issue was always there, and there's always that divide.
Yeah, I mean, that's I think that what we see in the gay community, the lesbian community, the LGBT community as a whole, is we are just microcosms of the greater perspective. Like, ultimately, everything returns to, like, high school. You get broken down into little groups, and depending on what label you get placed on your group, it depends on where you go. Mm-hmm. You know, the bars and the venues are all the tables at the lunchroom.
Exactly. Exactly. 100%.
You're absolutely right.
So you have your new EP coming up, you said, in April. You've got a new single out right now, and you're planning a tour, too.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about it, and I also I've got a writer that's interested in doing a book with me, so I don't know. I guess I might be busy. So I was thinking of doing a tour going back east and playing in my old stomping grounds where the band first started out, up in Albany, Rochester, that area, and Boston. And I'd like to go back down to L.A. and play, too. Maybe even play a few local gigs in Portland. It's been a while since I played live, and I've never sung live, so that would be something new to do.
Oh, wow. That's going to be probably exciting and nerve-wracking all at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. I've never done my Elvis thing in front of people, so that might be fun.
Well, that is great. And do you have a website where people can go and find out all of your upcoming tours, music, everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's www.susanthurston.com.
Oh, right. Well, Susan, we are, like, it's been really, like, enlightening having this chat with you. I am so glad that you called and joined us.
Well, I'm glad that you invited me. I had a great time.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck with the new tour and music. We look forward to seeing more from you.
Thank you. Just keep checking the website. I always keep it up to date. I'm expecting I'll do the release in April, but I could get tempted to do it before then because I have the record all done. So sometime when it's just sitting there, I can't be too put that out now, but I'm going to try and make myself wait until April.
All right. Well, we will keep everybody updated. We follow you on Twitter, and we're going to, if we find out, they'll find out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Susan.
Bye.
Bye.
She was really interesting. She's like, you know what? This is actually why we need to make sure we get more inclusion for everybody. Like, I'm saying that to myself because I'm the one who does 90% of the booking, but like.
Right. The producer of the show, hello.
Right, but it's, you know, like, we have, like, that was really interesting to me because the reason it's so interesting to me specifically is because, what was that? Did you cough up a hairball, bitch?
It almost made me draw.
Well, no, like, the reason it was so interesting to me is because we see things happening here in San Francisco, or I see things happening here in San Francisco, and I may say it's just like, oh, that's a local thing, like, the Lexington clothes. And we universally think it sucks. Little did I know that here she's saying that, like, it's happening a lot of places, that women don't have places to go, or, like, and she's wondering as, like, this integral member of the community, like, where the hell is my community going?
Right.
So it was very interesting. And she lives in Portland, which to me would be, like, lesbian haven, I would think.
Right.
Wow. All right, you guys. We are going to be taking a quick break, and we'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this. To the left, to the left.
To the left, to the left. Hi, everybody. It's Poyo Del Mar, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, Podmatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast. But we couldn't do it without all of you and the support of our media sponsors at Left Magazine. David Helton and Jeff Kaluzny provide you Northern California's most beautiful LGBT entertainment publication. For the latest news, entertainment, politics, and gorgeous photo pictorials of Northern California's LGBT life, please visit our sponsors at Left Magazine. Go to www.liveleft.com. That's www.liveleft.com. And be sure to tell them that Poyo and Pearl sent you. To
the left, to the left. All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Miss Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And we are very excited to have... She has had top 40 hits dating all the way back to before, none of your fucking business when her last top 40 hit was.
That's right.
You may know her for her big smash hit, Too Blind to See It, or even as recently as last year when her return single, Deep in the City, hit number one on dance charts for 16 weeks, you guys. DJs around the world embraced the return of our next guest, and we are excited because she was in the studio with our friend of the podcast, Leo Frappier, just this afternoon recording her next single, and we're excited to hear all about it from the beautiful Kim Sims. Hi, Kim.
Hey, girl.
Hey, how you two doing?
Fabulous, girl. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm just loving the city as I used to live here some years back, but I'm loving being here in the city again and recording and just getting ready for a photo shoot tomorrow, and I'm just happy and excited, and it's good talking with you all.
Do you miss living in the city?
I do. You know what? I do miss living here. I forgot how incredible it is here. You know what I mean? And it's been so long, so I've seen some changes, but it's beautiful. Yeah, so I do miss it.
Where are you living now?
I live in Atlanta now. I'm from Chicago originally. I'm living in Atlanta. Yeah, I've been there for 18 years.
Girl,
and don't believe the hype. Atlanta sucks. I hate Atlanta. But anyway, moving forward. Did I say that? I love you, Atlanta.
I heard the men in Atlanta are fine, though.
The men in Atlanta are fine.
Yes, they are.
But, girl, whether a gay man or a woman, you cannot live on good dick alone, honey. If
that's
the city
true.
Sucks, like,
yeah,
that's
true. You know that's true, child. I'm married to one, and I don't even live on that. Oh, did I get
that?
y'all done got the right one. Yes, you did.
So, you know, Kim, I was telling Elfie earlier today and yesterday when we were talking about setting this interview up.
Yes.
Girl, not to blow up our spot about how old we may or may not be. We are both going to deny if people call us old. But, girl, I had the Too Blind to See It cassette single. Which we called a yes, ma'am, and we called it a cuss single, girl, because we could not be bothered with that.
A cuss single.
And I had the whole album when I was in college, girl. Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
Did you? Oh, thank you so much. That means so much when I hear people say that. And you know, I was only 12 when I recorded that song, baby.
Girl, you tried it. Girl. You have to be coming out of my mouth. You tried it. I live.
Yes. I love that time in my life. It was wonderful touring and doing the whole nine. I never realized that song would take off and fly like it did. And it still gets me gigs and hoping to get more. And with the new stuff out there, you know, I never really quit. I just sort of, you know, took a vacation for about 12 years. Just to do me. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Yeah, but Too Blind was, you know, it was everything, and it was what I asked for, and I got exactly what I asked for, so I feel blessed.
You know, the thing about that particular single is that it fell into a time when that sound was so prominent in music, and I was thinking about this just today because some other musician released a new song, and it just shot to number one on the charts, and it sounds literally like every other song that's out right now.
I know it. Yeah, it held its own. It had its own little sound, and you know, coming, so it was, you know, late in the 90s, I mean, coming out of the disco era, if you will, but, it, you know, and doing the house, but yet crossing over to, you know, to the pop, and even if there was an R&B version of it, I mean, it just had the chords were just so real and so true to the time, and it's, you know, even to now, I talk to DJs, and they said, this song's a classic, we can play it now, we don't have to have a new version of it or anything, you know, it still fills the dance floors, and that feels great.
And honey, of course, you knew as soon as it was coming on, because...
Hey, let me tell you something.
There she was saying, ain't no man in the world.
In the world. Let me tell you something. No man in the world, baby. I say that to my husband all the time.
How does it feel to finally be back on the road again?
It feels great. It feels great for so many reasons because
you know, I guess in anything that anybody does in life, when you're passionate about your job, if you will, this has been a gift that was given to me. I'm passionate about it. And when I'm on stage, that's where I feel like I'm in heaven. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love just being able to stand there and sing and to see the people sing back and react. So it feels so good. And then having that new single out, Deep in the City, that was an homage to the DJs. My best friend wrote that, Thomas Arambula. It was just perfect, and the timing was right. So I'm looking at 2017 being all about me.
All right.
Awesome.
And Deep in the City, in many ways, lyrically, was an homage to a time gone by in clubs.
Yes.
When clubs were clubs and people went there. And I really loved the fact that it spoke to an era that I think, unfortunately, so many young, especially young gay people, because eras gone by, the gay community found each other in the clubs and in that club environment. And it's missing now a little bit.
It is. Well, you know, the first person that Thomas wrote the song, but the first person he paid homage to is Frankie Knuckles. I mean, you know, these young folks, a lot of them do know about Frankie Knuckles, but I mean, he set the tone, and that time and that era and paying homage to that was a time that you could go in the clubs, you know, be you straight, be you gay. You had it in Chicago. We were all hanging out at these underground clubs, and they were predominantly gay. And, honey, that was a place to be, and that was back in the 90s. You know what I'm saying? So it was definitely a joy to sing that song because it gave me my memories back, you know, and it's also letting people know you should have been back there in those warehouse days, back when house was house, you know?
Yeah.
And legends were made back then, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was an awesome song to sing, and I'm, you know, I'm forever grateful for being on the chart and doing as well as it did.
What does it mean to you to have, like, such a large gay following, speaking of which?
It means everything to me because, you see, we were talking about this last night. LT and I were walking, and we were heading to somewhere to eat dinner, and I was just saying, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, straight people ask me, they say, you know, Kim, you're so big in the gay community, you know, why do you think that is? I said, it's because they get me. They, you know, they're about love. They're about doing who they are, you know. They're people. We're all the same. There's joy in the community. And when I sing and I find myself feeling the joy, I feel the connection. And so to answer the question pretty easily is that I have always been embraced by the gay community because I believe I've embraced people in general. And I just love everybody. And I put that out. And I believe that's why. I really do.
I also have to say that I think that for a lot of people in the queer community, the LGBT community, the fact is that straight people seem to always be looking for, like, the next thing, the very next,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we embrace, you don't have to have a song out that's hot on the chart at this very moment because...
That's right. Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, aside from the fact that I'm crazy as hell, and I know y'all really enjoy that, but the other part of it is, you know, for years when nobody else was calling Kim Sims, it was always the gay community. I tell the joke that, but, you know, when I get out on stage, I always thank the community because for a good 20 years, y'all fed my ass, honey. And I don't mean I was sitting on the street. I mean, I was literally at a table thanks to you, first God. So you know what I mean? So you embraced me and you never let me go. You know what I mean? And that's what's so phenomenal about, you know, having the love from the community. That's what it is. Absolutely.
Music for the LGBT community is integral in a way I don't think it is outside of our community. Part of that is because of the club experience. Because, girl, when I hear a club hit come on, that if I hear a Miss Sheila Brody singing or, you know, one of these women whose voices became part of the soundtrack to my coming out experience or my young gay life, I know what that meant to me, and I think it has a special meaning in a way that straight people just can't relate to. To be honest,
they can't, and you know that's okay because we can relate to it, can't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, no, I totally agree. I think that, you know, I had a soundtrack for my life before my, you know, my music came out, but it was always about the club and the dancing. I mean, I was singing a little bit of everything, but when I think back on the days that made me the happiest or the days that make me the happiest now, it's the sound that I fell into, if you will, being house, because I never really considered myself a house music artist. I always felt like I was, you know, I'm a singer, blah, blah, blah. But house music and dance music and just happy joy, garage music, I think it all, you know, culminates into one thing. And I think it's how you perceive it. And I've always enjoyed it. And it's just been about, it's been my life. So here we are. That's why I'm talking to you.
I love
of
it.
Of course. And you were just in the studio today with Leo Frappier, recording at least one new song. So what can you tell us about this new single?
Well, this new single is also written by my best friend, Thomas Arandula. It's called Turn It Up. And this is, you know, the saying, you know, everybody either getting turned or turned up or, you know, let's go get turned up, you know. So it was something they kept saying, you know, Kim, I just want to write a song that, you know, talks about turning it up. So it's not so much, it's not just about being in the club. I mean, you know, you wake up in the morning and you just can't seem to get your engine revving. Turn it up. Turn down the phone because you're going to get turned up. So it's a happy song. It's about living life to the fullest. It's about standing up and speaking up and speaking out and just turning it up. And Leo is going to do a phenomenal job, honey. We laid some ad-libs that is going to slay the bay and everywhere else, honey. It's just you. Trust me on that show.
It's taken 12 years off to do you. And all of that. Why was last year the time that you decided in your head, like, now's the time for me to be back, honey? I got to get back on that dance floor.
Well, you know what? Everybody just kept saying, Kim, well, you know, what are you doing? I think I battled with a little depression because I didn't feel like I was getting my due. I made some bad decisions from the east side. You know, the stories are always true. You see some of these people fall from the wayside, and it's because, you know, they fell into a bad deal and didn't know how to get themselves out of it. By the grace of God, I've been married for the last 18 years, and I've got a fabulous husband who has handled business from that standpoint. But I think I got angry with how things went, and I just let it take control of me. And then last year, you know, at the LP, just so many people talking to me saying, Kim, we still want you out here. This is the time. And I think the 90s music was making a resurgence, and then the UK and Scotland and all that, they started calling. And I said, all right, I'm going to come on and dust those little heels off, child. I'm not in a wheelchair or on a walker, so I might as well go on here and get on out here one more time. So it was really just coaxing from everyone telling me to do it. I prayed on it, and here I am.
Well, it would seem really opportune timing because 10 years ago, everything was an 80s night or whatever.
Right.
Yes.
But now, honey, it's all about the 90s. These are 90s babies.
Right.
Yes. So it's a resurgence. And so it's like they, you know, kind of, you know, you get rebirthed or reborn or however you want to put it. So that had a lot to do with it. But also, I believe I'm mentally and emotionally okay now and ready to just come on out here and play. And then for Deep in the City to do as well as it did, it keeps that fire under me and say, okay, well, let's go on here and put another one out. Let's come on here and do what we can do. And then just being embraced by the community as I have been, it was a no-brainer for me.
You know, it's a reminder, and I get these on a regular basis, that no matter what profession you're in or degree of success you might have accomplished, that we're all human, and part of the human condition is to question yourself. And here you're a woman who has had a successful recording career, even if it was a number of years ago. You have name recognition among fans. You have a fan base that's waiting for you. But it sounds like you actually started to question for yourself, well, is there even a place for me? Do people still want me?
Yes. It's that normal thing that anyone would do. You know, you always, I think in the music industry, especially with artists, you find so many tormented and tormented souls. You know, when you hear about all these different comedians and musicians, you know, they can stand in front of you and tell a joke, but then they go back and they're lonely or they're disgusted or depressed or whatever. And, you know, you live for the spotlight. I tell everybody I travel with my own spotlight, honey. If you don't give me a mic, I'll just start singing and stand under a mic somewhere. I think it's one of those things where you just, you can't give it up, but yet you do sit back and think, well, you know, these young folks are coming out and maybe nobody will listen. Or, but it's not that way. It's, you know, it's about not giving up. I've told my children this, you know, you can't give up. So how do I look at them and say, do as I say and not as I do? You know what I mean? So for me, it's definitely been a journey, and I've had my moments, you know, and I dark moments where I just did question myself, but then I realized that, you know what, I came here for a purpose, and I was given this voice, and there's so many people out there that would love to have a voice to sing, and I'm going to do what I got to do while I can. I snapped out of it.
And more than even that, sometimes we are not people who are accountants or bus driver. We have a passion. We have a passion for an artistic form of presentation and entertainment.
Right.
And there are times when you have to say, I don't care if I'm getting paid a dime for this. I've got to do it because this is what I love to do.
Yeah. This is true. You are so right. That's so true. And I've done that. And I, you know, the appreciation level for me was seeing someone standing in front of me as I'm singing, and I know I'm standing there for free, but it was bigger than free. It wasn't a financial free. You know what I'm saying? For me, I was freeing myself. I was singing. I was enjoying knowing that I'm standing there and giving somebody else something to smile about. So the financial thing, of course, we want to be paid for our craft, but it's bigger than that. I used to say early on in my career, you know, I couldn't believe they were paying me what they were paying me to come up there and perform, you know. And I used to tell people, I would do this. I don't need to be paid. I don't need to be paid. I think what happens is you start to question whether are you giving this away? Are people appreciating you? And then when they stop listening and they stop maybe calling or wanting to hear your music, and then you get that, you start questioning, oh damn, I'm just not even worth paying. You know what I mean? So you do get it does get convoluted a little bit, but at the end of the day, your gift should always be your gift. You should give it freely, and if there's a chance that they want to give you a piece of change for it too, she will not refuse.
Now,
yeah.
I mean, you jokingly said that you recorded that when you were 12, but you were fairly young when you started and made your big breakthrough. And one of the things that we see so often in the entertainment industry is that people will be somewhat assigned a sound, and then they become part of an entire breadth of musicians that make similar music.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing about it is that record labels are not actually investing in artists. They're investing in a song or maybe two songs.
And
so it's very easy to imagine that you came out in an era wherein you could have a little bit got lost in the shuffle, and then here you are locked into a contract that's not in your best interest long after they're actually even focusing on you. Was that kind of your experience?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And now, as you said, it's such a different world now. You know, you're not getting the same, you know, there's nobody out there giving advances. And, you know, the hardest thing for me has been that I started my own label. You know, you have to pay yourself first. You know, it's just a different world. So, yes, that is exactly correct. Absolutely. It's a struggle from that standpoint. I tell you what's harder, too, is just, you know, getting, I have a base, but, you know, getting the DJs and the record pools and the radio pools, you know, getting all those people involved and getting them to listen. And, you know, there's still a lot of payola that people want. And, you know, it takes it away from the way it was back in the day where, you know, you literally, somebody would put your song on a chart and they literally did it because they liked it. You know what I mean? And it wasn't, even though the labels might have been doing their little do on the side of pain. Nowadays, you really have to go out there and hustle as an artist, and, you know, to get people to listen to you, to, you know, to pay attention. So, yeah, it's a harder dynamic, but I will never put a song out on anybody's label but my own. And that's just how I'm going to end my career, is doing it for me. What is that, Boo Boo For You By You? Yes, mm-hmm. That old school thing. Mm-hmm. That's it. This is what I'm banking on, and my faith is, because I did have such a phenomenal start, and I even to the younger DJs, the DJs that are, you know, in my age group, and, you know, and the fact that we are sort of looking back at the 90s a little bit, that's what I tend to bank on, just that, you know, that name recognition. Of course, getting a stellar song out there that's going to, you know, wear the dance floor out, but, I mean, having people see a Kim Sims record and not passing it by, at least willing to give it a listen because of the fact that I had, you know, the success that I did. So that's what I'm banking on as well.
And this isn't an era of the singles. Back in the day, I had two options. I had to either buy your whole album or buy the cassette single. And as it turned out, I did both. But, you know, nowadays, honey, like, people can just, you don't even have to have a record label whatsoever. Put it on YouTube and put it up on iTunes yourself. And next thing you know, it's a hit.
True. And you know what? We were really talking about that with this new stuff, because you can just become a celebrity on your own accord. You really don't have to have your own label. But I think because I'm cut from that cloth of, you know, that old school, I just want to have something that I call home. And, you know, even putting up the YouTube videos and doing all that, I just feel like I need to have something. You know, this is coming from, you know, Diva Down Records is what my label is called, Diva Down. And you can look at it from a minute. I guess since we've had this interview, you can kind of take it either way. You can say, oh, this Diva was down, or the Diva is getting down, or, you know, there have been down times, or she about to down y'all with some new stuff. I mean, you can look at it anyway, but Diva Down for me was just the name that I wanted to call it. So even with, as I said, uploading different videos and doing that thing with YouTube and all that, I get it, but I just want to have a home, and that's, you know, that's kind of why I want to put it on my own label.
You're having a photo shoot with Jose Guzman tomorrow, I think, too,
oh,
right?
Yes. Oh, now that's going to be, oh, I met him over the phone, and he is everything, honey. I cannot wait for that. Yes, so that's tomorrow morning, and I've got all kinds of nice looks. And he's got a makeup artist that he says go beat my face into the newness again, honey. I cannot wait.
Oh,
I told her, I said, just give me, if you don't have any Botox in it, just make sure you got a ton of airbrush, boo-boo, because she needs all that.
Well, that's my drag dad, and we were talking about him earlier in the show, and Pearl and I have both done amazing photo shoots with him. You are going to get your life, honey.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm glad you guys said that, because that's important to me. I want to know that she is going to look as fabulous as you, too, if not even better. You know, I may just send you all a little picture just so y'all can just get your life with my face for a minute, okay?
All right.
See, I'm all about that.
No, I'm looking so forward to that. And then once I get done with that, I'll do a little interview with Tweeka Turner, who did a great remix on my Deep in the City last year. Did so well. She's going to do my interview tomorrow evening, and then probably go out and smoke a cigar. I smoke one in celebration. Have me a little cigar with LP Vargas, my manager / promoter / let's just call him / Irving, okay? we're gonna go and have, make a little celebration dinner, and then I'm gonna hit the airport early on Thursday morning and head back to Atlanta, and hopefully come back here within the next couple of months and shoot a video, and, you know, we'll put the song out in March, and hopefully it'll take off, and we'll make sure that you get a little taste of it before we get it going, okay?
Yeah, keep us posted.
A little taste of it. Girl, if you're sure coming back here to shoot a video for it, we better be in it, damn
right.
It. Hello?
Wait a minute. You know what? You can come on to the video. Should they say, shoot a video, we better be in it on it.
Right.
Yes, you are. You better hear what I'm saying.
I'll make sure I request the day after all.
I know that on Twitter you are Sims, S-I-M-S, Kim, K-Y-M.
Yes.
What is your other social media so listeners can get their life with you, girl?
So on Facebook, it's Kim Sims Fans.
Okay.
But there's also just Kim Sims. You know, if you just go to Kim Sims, K-Y-M-S-I-M-S, there's a Facebook page for that. Okay, and Instagram is Kim Sims underscore official fan pay, fan underscore page.
Girl, okay. We got it. We're just gonna search for Kim Sims. We're just gonna search for Kim Sims on Instagram, boo.
There you go. Please search my name. As long as it's not nothing negative, child, then that's me. If it's negative, just delete that shit and keep it moving.
Perfect.
If you see my face, you know it's a lie, child, because it's all about the positivity on this.
I love
it. Well, we are so grateful that you called and joined us. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you so much, and thanks for, you know, telling me that you got in my single back in the day, and that was a part of your youth. That means everything to me. I appreciate you both, and I thank the LGBT community for just showing me love and continuing to show me love, and I asked them all to go out and, you know, keep me in mind and go check out this new single and go out and like my pages and all that good stuff. And much respect to you both. Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Girl, it is the truth though, y'all. But I had, and the funny thing is, I can tell you all of the artists she was on mixtapes and stuff with, like Lisette Melendez, Karina. Oh my gosh, there were so many, because she came at the tail end of what was considered like freestyle and early European house music. It all sort of blended in together there for a little bit. For real, I remember distinctly the cover of that album and the cover of the cassette single. So that was Kim Sims, you guys, joining us. She's got a new single called Turn It Up. Going to be coming out with Leo Frappier. Anyway, we'll be back. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poya Lamar.
And I'm Pro T.
Hey, y'all. This is Bob the Drag Queen. You are listening to Party Foul Radio with Poya Del Mar and Pearl. Listen up, girl.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We just heard from...
house music diva Kim Sims telling us about her new single, Turn It Up, coming out with Leo Frappier. Before that, we heard from Susan Surftone. And we kicked off this episode's interviews with the iconic Lonnie Anderson.
Go and look up her new webisode series called My Sister Is So Gay. We're also trying to get some of the other cast members of My Sister Is So Gay on upcoming episodes. Pearl was gagged to realize that Deborah Wilson from Mad TV is on the series.
I'm so excited.
Girl, we're trying to get her for an upcoming episode.
And you know what? Come on, Party Foul Radio, for having an all-female episode.
Yes, it's true. Like, we just had, we can just give you three women, three very, very different women at that, nonetheless.
Fabulous, all three of them.
So, yeah, please support our ladies. They were all lovely. I want to tell you that next episode, we've already got a couple of our interviews booked. We are going to be joined next week by Miss Naomi Smalls, everybody. We're also going to be joined. He is the head of the Screen Actors Guild's LGBT committee, Jason Stewart. He's a very well-established both actor and comedian. He's a stand-up comedian. He does lots of comedy tours, as well as you may have seen him on a variety of television and film series that you probably might not have recognized him, but he's done some really great breakthrough acting roles, and by breakthrough, I mean that he has not been typecast as the gay character in the last year. So we're going to talk to him, and since it is the award season coming up with all of the, you know, Oscars and whatnot, I would love to get the insider's perspective on how the Screen Actors Guild takes a look at some of the LGBT roles that are out there. And since we know that Kelly Mantle, not that long ago, made history as the first person to be potentially considered for, I don't think she's going to be considered for an Oscar, but she's both eligible in the male and female categories because she's gender fluid. So we'll talk to him about that, and we will have much, much more on next week's episode. Something to definitely look forward to tonight. If Pearl and I were not here, recording this, we could have been in San Jose because we'd been personally invited to see John Edward, the psychic. We talked about him last week.
That would have been so good.
We'd been personally invited to see him, but they totally were understanding that we are doing this, and we are currently in negotiation phases to get John on an upcoming episode as well.
I better use his psychic powers to hear me say he needs to come on the show.
Well, he's already said he's going to come on, girl.
Perfect. So we heard it.
So, see, look, he heard it. It was one of the spirits. He's like, from the other side, I'm seeing a departed personality named Domino. Domino.
Oh,
telling me that this person is no longer with us, but he's speaking to me.
Yeah.
That was so shady.
Girl, I did not see that coming. Anyway,
so John Edward is going to be with us on an upcoming episode. You guys, we've got a lot of fun stuff coming for you guys. I have to admit that with 2017 being so exciting, and I want to tell a little quick story. I was in an Uber pool the other night, and these two people in the back seat, they got in or whatever, and they started talking, and they were like, of course, I was ear hustling, you know, that's where you eavesdrop on them. But they were talking about, like, oh, we're going to start our podcast, and da-da-da. And I was like, so what kind of podcast? And then I sure did, like, tell them all about it. So I don't know your names, but if you're listening to the podcast, because they saved the page, I hope that you guys enjoy this. And, you know, it takes a lot of work, but it's very rewarding to do this, to, like, be able to reach people around the world and around the globe. So
good luck out there.
Yeah, absolutely. We support you in your efforts if you're those two people, that man and that woman, whoever they were. So hopefully they'll go and follow us on Twitter, as you guys should, at Party Foul Radio.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook.
At Party Foul Radio. All right.
Do not forget to check out our sponsors over at Left Magazine at liveleft.com.
That is right. And I'm going to schedule in a meeting this week. I've been telling you guys for weeks now, we might have a potential sponsor or endorsement, some kind of an advertisement gig. So I'm going to talk to them this week.
Come on, iTunes. We are coming for you.
All right, you guys, I think that's it. Remember, we are going to both be at
the Glamazon this Sunday.
So come out and check us out Sunday, 9:45 p.m. at the cafe. Until next time, I think that's it.
That's it, girl.
All right, I'm Poet Lamar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We out of here, bitch.
Bye. It's so fun.